From the best-selling Christian Heroes Then and Now series, YWAM Publishing presents Betty Green, Wings to Serve, by Janet and Jeff Benge, read for you by Rebecca Gallagher. For information about other titles in this outstanding series, please visit our website at ywampublishing.com or call us at 800-922-2143. Chapter 1. Target Practice. The twin-engine Lockheed B-34 bomber stood illuminated in pools of white floodlight on a corner of the tarmac. Betty Green strolled toward it, her parachute strapped securely to her back and her fur-lined flying jacket buttoned tight against the crisp fall air. Her heart beat wildly as she approached the airplane. She climbed into the cockpit and pulled the safety belt snug around her. Already sitting in the co-pilot seat beside her was the officer in charge. This was Betty's first flight in a Lockheed B-34, and he was going along to check Betty out in the aircraft.
"I'll watch while you put her through the motions," grunted the officer in a disinterested, almost disrespectful way.
Betty methodically began working through her pre-flight procedures. She checked the fuel level in each of the plane's tanks. "Tank one full, tank two at the three-quarter mark," she called. Next, she adjusted her seat, moving it to the farthest back position. Someone much shorter than she had obviously flown the plane last. Next, she pulled her earphones on and checked the radio switches. With the first stage of preparations over, she turned her attention to the cockpit controls. As she adjusted the rudder, unlocked the controls, and made sure the parking brake was on, the officer beside her said,
"You seem to know what you're doing. Any questions?"
"No, sir," Betty replied. "So far, so good."
"Well, in that case, wake me if you need me," the officer replied.
Betty glanced over at the officer, thinking he was joking. But to her surprise and her dismay, he had slid his seat back as far as it would go and had already settled down for a nap. Despite the officer's lax attitude, Betty continued with her pre-flight check. Looking out the cockpit window, she made sure the flaps were working, and then she set them for takeoff. Next, she checked the throttle control and primed the engines. "Clear," she called twice, leaning out the cockpit window, and then flicked a switch to start the engines. First one and then the other burst to life. Once the engines were both purring smoothly, Betty released the brake and pushed the throttle forward to rev the engines. The B-34 rolled forward. Betty talked to the control tower on the radio as she started to taxi the plane across the tarmac. A controller instructed her to proceed to the end of the runway and hold position. Once she had brought the airplane to a halt, three men hauling a cable scurried to the back of the plane, where they attached the cable to a metal eyelet at the back of the tail. As the men scurried back, one of them ran to the front, where Betty could see him from the cockpit, and he gave her a thumbs up. Betty radioed the control tower for permission to take off. Soon the Lockheed was barreling down the runway before lifting into the cool, dark, moonless night. The cable at the back of the plane was taut as it dragged a large canvas square with an enormous bullseye painted on it behind the plane.
"Head to 2,000 feet.
Mumbled the officer without opening his eyes. Betty adjusted the flaps, keeping the throttle on full. She eased the joystick forward a little and then banked to the left in a wide circle as she gained altitude. There was little to see below except the lights in the distance of one or possibly two small boats bobbing about in the Atlantic Ocean. Once she reached 2,000 feet, Betty leveled off the plane and proceeded to make a pass over the range where the anti-aircraft gunners were practicing. All at once, an enormous burst of light exploded about 20 yards off the right side of the aircraft. Betty's eyes widened as she realized how close the live shells from the anti-aircraft guns were to the plane. She glanced over at the commanding officer, who was curled up and snoring in his seat. Betty's mind raced. It was her first time pulling targets for gunnery practice. Was this normal? Should she wake the officer and ask him whether shells ought to be exploding so close to the airplane? The officer, like most of the men stationed at Camp Davis, North Carolina, was not very enthusiastic about having women pilots serving there, and Betty worried that he might reprimand her for being a nervous woman if she woke him. Another burst of gunfire exploded beside them. This time, it was close enough to light up the entire cockpit with an eerie glow. Betty decided that no matter what the commanding officer said, she was going to wake him. Just then, another burst of gunfire whizzed past the plane. As it did so, the officer sat bolt upright. "What was that?" he yelled. "Shells are exploding all around us. Is that normal?" Betty asked. "Normal, normal," the officer spluttered. "Some fool down there is aiming right at us and not the target. What are they trying to do, shoot us down?" Frantically, the officer reached for the radio. He barked some orders into the microphone, and within 2 minutes, the shells had stopped exploding around the Lockheed B-34. Betty breathed a sigh of relief and noticed the officer seemed to have suddenly lost interest in sleeping. Betty made several more passes over the anti-aircraft gunnery range. This time, the gunner's sights were aimed on the target being towed behind and not on the B-34 itself. As she flew, Betty marveled at how she was fulfilling her childhood dream to one day fly. She was a member of the Women Air Force Service Pilots. She flew military aircraft in logistical and support roles, and her accomplishments in the air were helping America's war effort. Yet, she also had a higher purpose for her flying. Being a part of the Women Air Force Service Pilots was just a stepping stone on the path to achieving her real goal, combining her love of God with her love of flying to serve others. But that night, it all seemed to her a long way from the life she had known growing up in Seattle on the shores of Lake Washington.